You are listening to a very late edition of the Tuesday, January 2nd edition of RotoViz Radio. I'm Pat Corain on Twitter at Pat Corain, and with me is Sean Siegel on Twitter at FF underscore contrarian. Sean, how's it going?
Great. We wanted to start out tonight by congratulating Scott Frost and the Central Florida Knights, your 2017 national champions. We're going to talk about this a little bit later with Pete, but it's always exciting to see the mid-major team win a national title. And when we talk about it with Pete later, we go into Star Wars a little bit, the connection between the two topics. And we discover that Pat and Pete, number one, don't actually watch Star Wars, and secondly, that I wasn't a huge fan of the most recent additions, which hopefully that will not result in executive producer Matthew Friedman pulling the show.
Yeah. So, you know, as you kind of just covered, the show gets a little off the rails because we have on our friend Peter Overzet. We do talk about football, of course. Specifically, we really get into the FFFC playoff tournament, which is a really cool playoff tournament where you pick one player from each team. It's like 3,500 entries, a big grand prize. So that's kind of what we get into with the heart of the conversation. And of course, we have some Pats talk since Pete's on. Anytime Pete's on, we got to talk to Pats. And then you know, Sean mentioned the conversation kind of goes into some other topics as well. We are actually be on the lookout here because this will be the first show to drop, but kind of to make up for the late show this week and not putting out a show last week, given all of the holiday craziness. We are actually going to put out a second show with Blair Andrews, so covering different topics, and so that show will be out shortly after this one drops. So kind of you get a bonus show this week. So be on the lookout for that, and also be on the lookout for great content all off season from rotoviz.com, which you can get a 30% discount to at the RotoViz podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of our premium content. Also helps support this podcast, which you can also do by going to iTunes and rating, reviewing the show, subscribing to the show. You've got two options, the RotoViz radio feed or the RotoViz fantasy football show feed, which is a little bit pared down with this show and just a couple others. So, yeah, help us out. Support RotoViz. Support us on iTunes. You can also contact us via Twitter at RotoViz Radio or Gmail, rotovizradio@gmail.com. But, yeah, let's get to Peter Overzet on Twitter at Peter Overzet. Please welcome to the show, Peter Overzet. He's the host of Fantasyland, the man behind Pete Manzanelli. Fairly frequent guest on this show as well. Pete, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. You know, I was just out shoveling and snow blowing for the past 4 hours, and I got the message from you inviting me to hop on. So, you know, it's nice to be back to warmth, huddled around my computer talking to you guys.
Absolutely. It is 75 and sunny here in Tucson, Arizona.
Are we allowed to say fuck off on this program?
In this case, yes.
Okay, fuck off, Sean.
I'm in New York and it has been snowing all day. It finally stopped, but it's, yeah, I feel your pain, Pete.
Yeah.
All right, but, you know, Pete, as I mentioned, you've been on the show several times here, and you actually asked me if you're going to be coming on a lot, can we have a regular feature? So, as promised, here's a Pete's Pats News. You'll be covering your favorite team here for us just briefly here. And you kind of wanted to cover some breaking Patriots news. So the first Pete's Pats News is pretty exciting, covering this article, which is supposed to be dropping tomorrow, meaning Friday, as is probably when this podcast will post as well. So breaking news about the Patriots and a rift between Brady and ownership and coaching.
Yeah, no, thank you for tossing that over to me. I was at Foxborough today at 10:30 a.m. just to make sure everyone showed up to practice on time when Belichick wanted them to show up. So was making sure everyone was on time. But yeah, the rumor is ESPN is readying a hit piece tomorrow on Belichick, Brady, and Robert Kraft. And this sounds hilarious and made up, but apparently the topic is there is a power struggle among the trio as to who deserves the most credit for the dynasty. So some of the most talented owners, GMs, coaches, and players of our generation are caught up on who deserves the credit. And I guess the bombshell is that Brady went to Kraft to force Belichick to trade Jimmy G, and ESPN is planning a full day of promotion tomorrow for the article. So some interesting stuff there. Do you guys have a take?
Well, it seems like Kurt Warner and Mike Martz are probably most responsible for the dynasty, but out of that group, Pat, this trio, who do you give the most credit to?
I give the most credit to Belichick, I guess. Although, I mean, I don't know. Like, they're all lucky to have each other. I think Kraft is lucky as hell to have Belichick and Brady. I would give him like basically no credit, and as much credit as you can give an owner, which is low. And then Belichick and Brady, I think, are like probably the best two ever at their respective positions. So, shut up and get along would be kind of my attitude about it.
Does it, Pete, hurt Tom Brady at all that Matt Cassel was so functional the year that Brady had to miss?
Yeah, man. He's a system quarterback, for sure. I mean, and now you see Jimmy Garoppolo though, and you can't help but wonder, it does make sense that Jimmy Garoppolo situation could have been the straw that broke the camel's back with their relationship. And I am sure how good he's looking has put additional strain. And there's a lot of I told you so's flying around there. But yeah, it just seems so petty from these guys who, you know, act like it's all about football. That's all that matters. It trumps everything. So it's nice to be reminded that they're petty humans and narcissists with giant egos as well.
The thing that's strange is like once you trade Jimmy Garoppolo, you have to have this work for several years after it, or it's like a huge mistake. You know what I mean? Like if Brady and Belichick split up after this year, then you're crazy for having gotten rid of Garoppolo. If Brady plays like this for another 2 or 3 years, then it's like, well, what could we do? We're not going to franchise Garoppolo for 2 years in a row or something while we play Brady. So it just, given that you've already traded Garoppolo, this whole dynamic makes no sense. And it's even extra, it's even more petty than it would be if they hadn't done it.
Yeah, and I guess we have to reserve the right to wonder how much of this story is fabricated and blown out of proportion by ESPN getting people like us to talk about it on podcasts, and will definitely be a fun story to take over Wild Card Weekend. So I guess it'll be interesting to see what the sources are, what the quotes are, and how real some of this rift is. But it definitely makes sense that the Garoppolo situation could have put a strain on those three.
So Pete, we had you on tonight, obviously, because we needed the Pats update, but then secondarily, because you are our FFPC expert, and you know, having gone through the second year, really being ready to explode, like an old school receiver in year three, we had Monty Fon on the show a couple weeks ago, finished first overall in the FFPC regular season, ninth overall in the postseason, because and the highest team without Todd Gurley, which may actually be the superior accomplishment to those top eight teams. With his expertise as well now, I feel like you guys are ready to build the perfect FFPC playoff lineup.
Pat, I'm guessing you're going to do what I was going to do, and I just kind of wanted to remind listeners of kind of my FFPC resume and know why I am such an expert. Is that what you were going to do?
I was going to tell listeners about the FFPC challenge that we're going to be discussing, but go ahead and give them your credentials.
Yeah, I just want to give my resume. So yeah, I've done two FFPC main events last year and this year, and an FFC playoff challenge. I believe I'm in for 3,800, zero winnings, and have never made the playoffs or sniffed 500, I don't think, in a league.
And Pete and I co-own all of our entries, so that doubles as my credentials. All right, let's just, so you know what we're talking about here, we're going to be discussing the FFPC playoff challenge. They're actually sponsoring this show, but Pete and I entered last year. Jake Rickroad and I had an entry together last year as well. We're also going to be entering this year, Pete and I. So I think Sean's going to throw one in. So it's a sponsorship here, but we're also participating. But $200 enter, $100,000 grand prize, $600,000 total prize pool. They pay down to 550th place. There's no salary cap, no draft. Basically, you just pick 10 players to make up your roster. It's the FFPC style roster where you get two running backs, two wide receivers, a tight end, a quarterback, two flexes, and it's tight end premium. But the catch is you can't just pick any 10 players you want. You're only allowed to use one player from each NFL team. So if Tom Brady's your quarterback, can't have any other Patriots. And that's the roster for the duration of the entire playoffs, including the Super Bowl. No changes, no substitutions. So you kind of got to factor in which teams are going to make runs, you know, as you pick kind of your most important players. Because if NFL teams get knocked out, so do your players. So the contest capped 3,500 total entries. It sells out every year. It's going to sell out again. So make sure you sign up as soon as you listen to this. Go to myffpc.com, myffpc.com to get your team. Let's talk about it. I think.
Oh yeah. Oh, go ahead. I was just going to mention one other thing that there you do have of the 10 spots, kicker in defense as well.
Yep. Yeah. Good point. I think what we did last year, and Pete, you sent over the article that we actually wrote up last year. I don't know if we'll do this again, but we tried to guess the actual ownership percentages of every player that was sort of relevant in the field. And we did pretty well last year. If anything, we probably underestimated who the chalk plays were going to be. Like, we thought Ezekiel Elliott would be 55% owned. He came in at 87%. Le'Veon Bell, we thought, would be 65%, came in at 79%. Odell Beckham, top wide receiver, we thought would be 60%, came in at 79%. And then some other plays we were thought would be highly owned were highly owned, like Jordy Nelson, we guessed 50, came in at 52. Tom Brady, we guessed 50, came in at 47. So Travis Kelce, we guessed 70, was owned by 70% of the field. So these chalky, the guys who you think will probably own by a high percentage of the field, they were owned by a very high percentage of the field last year. And so I think we can use that to think about who people are going to be on in this tournament this year. And, Pete, I wanted to throw it to you for what you think the chalk lineup will be. We kind of went back and forth on this as we were looking to set our lineup. And it's just kind of a good place to start because this is kind of like a GPP where you're looking to finish first among a 3,500 entry field. I mean, it basically is a GPP. So you got to figure out where everyone else is likely to be.
Pete, yeah, start us out by telling us which two teams you're going to avoid completely, and then if that starts to center you in on a lineup, and if the defense and kicker are things you're looking at first, or if they're the last pieces that you put together there.
Yeah, and I think that the two teams you fade, I think, also plays into taking a look at the chalk lineup. So yeah, I'll run down what I'm thinking, and then maybe you guys can poke holes in some of my logic. I think the two teams that I want to fade, and I think everyone universally is going to want to fade, are the Titans and Bills. I think people, if they are leaning on an upset, it's definitely going to come in the NFC with the Falcons or Panthers. And so people are going to be more inclined to use a player from those games. I think we will see very, very few Titans and Bills used, which could definitely be interesting, especially maybe with a Derrick Henry with DeMarco Murray out. I think QB, I think like last year, we had projected Brady at around 50% ownership. That ended up being the case. He's not quite as dominant this year, and there are some other options, but I do think Brady will be the chalk quarterback. I think the chalkiest player across the entire contest will be Gurley. Last year, we had Ezekiel Elliott, as Pat mentioned, underestimated him. He was at 87%, and I think Gurley's even more of a smash play this year, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him 90% owned. Especially with their matchup against the Vikings in the second round, could scare some people off. of maybe some of the other options, with Gurley being kind of the only solid bet there. Le'Veon Bell, I think, is also going to be very chalky, especially with Antonio Brown kind of up in the air. After that, it's either going with Roethlisberger, and there's so many other good options, or Juju, which there's just some fragility there if AB comes back. I think Michael Thomas is going to be very chalky, primarily because I think people will want to avoid who to guess between Ingram and Kamara. I don't necessarily think that's right, because they both can have really good games together, but I think that will draw people to Michael Thomas. I think Julio is going to be extremely chalky. You know, Freeman injury, I guess maybe if Freeman sits, Tevin Coleman could be a sneaky good play, but with wide receiver a little thin overall, and you're looking to get one player from the Falcons who most people think is going to lose, I think we'll gravitate people to Julio. I'm running out of breath here. Kelsey, I think, is going to be very chalky at tight end again. Obviously, Gronk is there, but I'm assuming that Brady is going to pull ownership away from Gronk. And then Fournette, another kind of funnel player on the Jags. All the wide receivers, it's kind of a mess. People aren't going to want to use Bortles. I wouldn't be surprised if Fournette is 80 to 90% owned. And then the last flex spot I have is a Viking. I think it's going to be Thielen. He's just had such a great year. You know, people don't, in a PPR format, don't get super excited about owning Latavius. You know, you could make an argument for maybe Rudolph if you're pivoting off the tight ends. But yeah, Thielen, I think, will be high owned. And then that leaves us with a Panther and an Eagle. And I have Eagles D as a chalk play and Graham Gano as the Panthers kicker, since you do have to use a kicker from one of those 10 teams. So yeah, that would be my chalk lineup. I have talked too much. Poke holes in my theories.
I think that's the ideal lineup. And one of the things you didn't mention, but obviously as people are listening along there, they can tell that that lineup will actually fulfill the lineup requirements too, which is important. That gives you a quarterback, two running backs, two wide receivers, and then two more running backs to play in the flex positions, which almost certainly is the way to go based on these specific playoff teams that we have. And then also the lineup you put together there assumes, I think, that the Eagles lose behind Nick Foles, which, considering the strength of either opponent that they would get, is much more likely than it would have been previously, obviously, with Carson Wentz. So that's the lineup that people are going to want to go with. I think that one sort of easy little way that you could differentiate and still maintain exposure to all those top players would be just to drop down to Stephon Diggs. But that's the lineup. And so my question then would be, how much do you need to diversify? Because we can look at all of these individual players and say they're going to be very highly owned. How high owned will a lineup that just includes all of the chalk plays be?
I mean, someone's going to have it. I would be shocked if, you know, it was unique. And then I think the thing is that, like, we talked, you know, Pete really hammered on, and Gurley and Bell is going to be really highly owned. And I think I agree. I think Gurley is going to be like 90% owned. I think Bell is probably going to be 80% owned, particularly if the Brown news is bad. No one, I don't think Roethlisberger is going to be too high, highly owned of a play, which really puts you on Bell unless you want to just take your chances with like a Brown or a Juju play. So I really agree there. But I think Julio, he could be like 90% owned too, because I think if you're going Gurley, then Julio is just sort of like kind of a nice hedge play. Like, he's the obvious play on the Falcons, but if you end up losing Gurley, at least you have Julio in what was probably a high-scoring game in round one, and then you have him going forward. So I think people are going to really struggle not to pick Julio and basically just bank on a big first game. So all this to say, I think if you have that exact lineup, you're going to have trouble differentiating basically like that. It's not just that that exact lineup will probably be in the tournament. It's that lineups that look almost like that lineup are going to be in the tournament all over the place.
So one of the first changes you can make is you could switch your Patriots and Chiefs players and go from Brady to Smith and Kelsey to Gronkowski. And what that would do for you, and we all know that what the players score during the regular season doesn't necessarily project what they'll do in the playoffs next season, what have you. But Smith actually outscored Brady, and Gronkowski outscored Kelce on a per game basis. So in theory, you might have a little bit of a higher upside there. The concern people are going to have is that the reason you choose Brady in the first place is that you want to have exposure to a quarterback, in most cases, the highest scoring position in the Super Bowl, where you get double points. And the Chiefs and Alex Smith are much less likely to get there. However, in this particular case, and with the FFPC settings, the tight ends score enough points that, you know, Kelce, Gronkowski, those two guys are not that far off of these two quarterbacks in terms of the points that they score. So that would be an easy tweak that you could make. If you have Gronkowski, the Patriots make it to the Super Bowl, in most cases, you'd be disappointed to have a tight end going in the double points game, but his upside is so high that that's less of a consideration here.
Oh, yeah, and I just wanted to reiterate what Sean just said, because I don't think we had mentioned that yet, that that is one of the other scoring wrinkles is in the Super Bowl, all your players' points are counted double. So, you know, that definitely, like Sean said, you would normally, I think, conventionally maybe lean quarterback there, but with the 1.5, Gronk definitely makes sense. And I guess that's another angle we haven't really discussed yet is, you know, traditionally in these leagues, you're looking to get the most amount of games, you know, trying to get the teams that are going to make it to the Super Bowl, preferably a wild card team that gets four games. So I guess that's another, you know, thing to discuss. And as you mentioned, Sean, with if you do make that pivot with Alex Smith and then they go and play the Patriots in round two, you know, you could be looking at just a maximum of two games from them. What are your guys' kind of Super Bowl predictions right now? And maybe that will help us backtrack and inform some of these picks.
Go ahead, Sean, because I know it kind of sets up for another pivot that we both like at the running back position.
Yeah, so in the NFC, due to some things we've already talked about and just the strength of the Saints and the Rams, which some stat-based evaluations actually have as the two best teams in the NFL. I like those teams to make it to the NFC Championship game, and then obviously one of them moving forward to the Super Bowl. So in that particular instance, you've got two different things going on. You've got the potential for one of the players off of those teams to get the double points in the Super Bowl, obviously, but then both of those teams are wildcard teams, so you're getting an extra game from that player. And that's why, in terms of setting the lineup, what I wouldn't want to pivot off of is Kamara and Gurley with their extreme ceilings and the potential that they're setting up for so many games and the double point game.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, Pat and I have talked about, you know, is there a leverage play off of Gurley? You know, we've tossed Goff around, but it is a good point of just that ceiling that Gurley gives you access to. How much ground could you gain with Goff? What scenarios would Goff outperform Gurley and they still go far? I guess it is definitely having me rethink it. And then on top of that, the fact that they play at Minnesota in the second round if they win. And I guess that's the question of, you know, Sean, I think makes a good point of, you know, what are the points that you just don't want to throw away and making sure that where you are making pivots that it makes sense. Like a Brady to Gronkowski, you're probably not losing a ton of potential points. Whereas maybe if we're going from a Gurley to Goff or some of these others, you are. Where are you at with that, Pat, knowing that we have discussed maybe a Goff pivot?
Yeah, I think, the thing that kind of comes to me is that if you do go with Gurley and Kamara, then I think you need to pivot off of Bell. And that is an interesting question because Pete, in the chalk lineup that you laid out, I think the one thing that might not happen is maybe Michael Thomas could be a little bit less owned than we're thinking, because if you do want to go with four running backs, and as Sean mentioned, maybe that is the way to go, you could easily do Bell, Kamara, Gurley, Fournette, and still get your two wide receivers with Thielen and Julio. So Michael Thomas could lose ownership to Kamara, and then people are still going Gurley and Bell. So my feeling is if you have the construction that Sean, you know, really wants to go with here, Kamara and Gurley as your two kind of core running backs, then I think you'll have to move off Bell, who, as we talked about, it's like probably somewhere between 80 and 90% ownership. And I guess the question is, how do you do that? Are you willing to bet that Brown comes back? Do you just go with Juju, who we definitely know is going to play? Because this lineup's going to lock before the first playoff game, you know, a week before we'll know about Brown. Or, you know, is Roethlisberger even in the mix as someone who could be a quarterback in the Super Bowl? And then you could have, like, you could go a Gronk, could go with Gronk and Roethlisberger and, you know, bet on one of those two guys to be in your Super Bowl against Kamara and Gurley.
Yeah, it makes me wonder. I think quarterback really starts to, assuming you want to get away from the Brady chalk, I think quarterback might be where you really start to differentiate yourself. The more we talk about it too, I wonder if Breeze might be, you know, a sneaky good play in that you're getting access to a lot of Kamara and obviously all of Thomas's production, and then it gets you unique in some of those other spots. But yeah, it is, the more we talk about it, I don't know if it's possible to avoid Gurley. And then going back to that, I mean, I think you got to project Mark Ingram for not too fewer points than Kamara. So maybe Ingram's the smash pivot that we're not discussing.
The other option that I think becomes kind of interesting once you're talking about moving off of the ideal play, and especially if we're saying we want to move off of Le'Veon Bell, would be to go to Juju Smith-Schuster. And he's a player, again, with just massive upside, especially if Antonio Brown doesn't play. So if they go out there, the opposing defenses are saying, you know, we're going to stop Le'Veon Bell, take that away, make them throw, because Antonio Brown is either not playing or is limited, which is probably the most likely scenario based on what we know. Then Juju Smith-Schuster goes out there again as someone who could easily put up 10 catches, 170 yards, and a couple of touchdowns. And I say easily, that's obviously not the most likely result, but it's certainly a possible result based on what we've seen from him recently and, you know, paired up with a solid quarterback in Roethlisberger. The other thing you could do is move to Tyreek Hill as another wide receiver option, someone who has this huge single game upside where he could catch a long touchdown pass, could potentially score in multiple ways and give you that big game, and then the Chiefs are eliminated. So if you're thinking Chiefs go down, then Hill maybe gives you a couple of burst points. And if we want to, then again, move off the ideal lineup, we can move from Julio Jones to Devontae Freeman, who has recently been on fire.
Yeah, was Freeman back at practice? I know his status was still up in the air, which could complicate things. Oh, it looks like he wasn't listed on the injury report. So yeah, I guess Freeman is definitely in play as a pivot there. And yeah, considering how much ownership we thought Julio would get, I think that that definitely makes sense. So Sean, do you have it as a Pats? I know you like Saints and the Rams, and then is it Pats in Jags or Pats in Steelers for you?
I think even with Antonio Brown potentially limited, that you're still looking at the Steelers. The Jaguars defeated Pittsburgh early in the season and made Roethlisberger look awfully bad. But I think that the two teams that you're looking at as the most likely in the AFC are those two teams, the 1 and 2 seeds, and then like we talked about in the NFC. And so I think that that's how my roster sets up, with the idea of, you know, how do we get exposure to the sort of safe plays with the Steelers and Patriots, but go with Saints and Rams as the players we think could end up being the real tournament winner.
Yeah. And the more I look at this too, the more I think Fournette might even be right there with Gurley ownership, because who else are you even, I guess maybe people could be drawn to taking the Jags defense just because.
Yeah, that's the other one people will do.
Yeah. So I guess that could keep Fournette down a little, but I couldn't even see that slipping to more than say like 75% Fournette, 25% Jags D.
Right, because if you go Jags D, then you can go with Ertz at tight end for the Eagles, which would give you, that's like the one spot where maybe you could count on production there. So on that offense, I don't think that'll be the chalk play, but I think some people will make that pivot. So that'll keep Fournette's ownership down a little.
It's especially difficult to get away from him when he actually is going to have a very good matchup in that initial game, which is guaranteed. And then assuming they move on, a very good matchup in the second game. So if you assume the Jaguars play two games, if both of those are very pro Fournette matchups, it's difficult to move away from that. I think if we had a clearer picture of what the Jaguars wide receivers were going to look like in terms of health, then it would be pretty compelling to make that your spot where you move away. We've seen, you know, huge target shares for Westbrook. We've seen huge target shares for Keelan Cole. And we've seen them have some situations where they really capitalized on that, especially with Cole. So if you had a better sense of where Allen Hurns was, of where Marquise Lee was, and knew that they were going to be a Cole and Westbrook heavy lineup, then that would get pretty interesting. But because we don't know that, and then going back with Fournette's matchup, it's a much more difficult play.
Yeah, I don't think you can touch any of the Jags wide receivers, which is really going to push people to Fournette. And no one's going to touch Bortles. So I think it'll be and when we look at the ownership percentage last year of the quarterbacks, there wasn't much interest in the lower range quarterbacks. There were basically like four plays, and most of the ownership was concentrated around three guys in the field. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Matt Ryan were the only guys above 10% last year. And, you know, I think that makes sense. Obviously, Brady, you know, the Patriots ended up winning the Super Bowl and facing off against the Falcons. So those were kind of those Super Bowl, I won a quarterback in the Super Bowl picks. And then Aaron Rodgers was kind of similar to the Gurley Kamara plays this year, where you're getting that extra game because they were in the wild card round. And, you know, if they make it all the way to the Super Bowl, you get your double points. But so I think that does make quarterback a little bit interesting as a differentiation spot, because you know that probably the field is going to cluster around those top guys. So it'll probably be Brady. I think we'll see some Roethlisberger, just given the likelihood of them making the playoffs. And then I guess one guy we haven't talked about, and I'd be curious to get your thoughts on, would be Case Keenum, because the Vikings are the favorite, you know, according to Vegas, to come out of the NFC. So I would guess that just for that reason alone, some people might be interested in Keenum. Also, that Thielen hasn't been quite as dominant over Diggs to end the season, so he's not as comfortable play as he would have been like 4 weeks ago. Do you think Keenum will have some ownership in the tournament, and what do you think of him as a play?
Pete, you had mentioned this as one of the plays that you guys are considering. Give us the pro Keenum outlook here as you're putting together your team.
Yeah, I think the outlook is all about the path. You know, they get a home game and against, you know, most likely the Rams. That could be a tough spot for them. They beat the Rams, I believe, earlier this season. Am I making that up? I'm pretty sure they did.
No, I believe they did.
Yeah. So they'll be feeling good about that. And then on the other side, if they get past the Rams at home, then you're going on the road to Philadelphia, but you're going against not a Carson Wentz-led Eagles team. So I think...
Or you have the Saints at home.
Or the Saints at home, right. So I think the path is realistic. None of those teams look like juggernauts. The best team is probably the Rams, and you'd be getting them at home. So I think that's the story you tell yourself about the Vikings. And then on top of that, knowing that the ownership might be really concentrated on Thielen. So if you know you could get them to the Super Bowl, everyone's on Thielen, all of a sudden you pivot to Keenum and you get access to, you know, Kyle Rudolph points, Jerick McKinnon points, as you mentioned, Stephon Diggs points. So I definitely think there's some merit to that if you think they can make it to the Super Bowl.
The interesting thing about Keenum is that he has made Adam Thielen a fantasy star and Kyle Rudolph a very playable tight end. Even with Stephon Diggs being a little bit disappointing, still a solid wide receiver too. And yet Keenum himself has not been that high scoring a player, in part because he's not adding anything with the legs, and in part because they don't have a lot of peripheral stats that the number three, number four wide receivers are getting. He only has two games this season where he had more than two touchdowns. Now, he has a lot of games with two touchdowns, so he's a very good floor play, I think. And it does set up nicely in terms of no longer having the Eagles out there as this really scary team. That doesn't mean that Nick Foles couldn't lead the Eagles to victory, because Nick Foles is not a bad quarterback in his own right, and that's a very loaded team. But if you assume that they're going to win the first game, get to host the NFC Championship game in a dome, then suddenly he looks like a very solid, if still, you know, difficult to get behind emotionally kind of play.
My favorite play that we've mentioned at quarterback, and Sean, this was your mention here, was Alex Smith. Just going, you know, looking at the ownership percentage again, it's like, I think that percentage of Alex Smith ownership will be really low, because if you don't go Kelsey, then you might go Hill because you wanted to get like a Freeman involved instead of Julio, and so you need another wide receiver. Or you might go Kareem Hunt. So I think that Smith is probably the fourth highest owned chief, and Kelsey is going to be very highly owned to start with. So I think he's going to be really low owned. And as you mentioned, Sean, you might not be giving up that much in terms of scoring. And hell, there is a chance they make the Super Bowl. And if not, you might have someone like Gronk or Bell in there.
Yeah, I think the hard thing for me is, I think my favorite play in this entire challenge right now is Kareem Hunt. I think because of the guys we mentioned kind of in that order, Kelsey, Hill, Smith, that he is going to draw fairly low ownership, especially relative to the other running backs. His usage ever since they made the play calling change at coordinator has been extremely high. Against the Titans, you have to think at home with that spread, he's going to get a ton of run. So I just really like Hunt, to the point where if you tell me he's going to be low owned and that usage is going to be there, I don't know if I can get on someone else on the Chiefs.
And I'm not as big a fan of looking at previous game between two teams and saying, you know, this is going to really inform what happens in the next game, as some people might be. But it is interesting that the Chiefs went to New England and blew them out to start the season. They had a similar blowout victory a couple years ago at home against the Patriots, and their playoff game a couple years ago was very competitive, which obviously the Patriots are still going to be the strong favorites there, but the Chiefs might match up nicely against New England. And certainly they were so bad during that middle stretch of the season that if you watch those games and saw them struggle on offense, and they're frankly just not a very good team on defense, then it makes it a lot more difficult to invest in Chiefs players in a way where you're really banking on them to make it all the way to the Super Bowl. But that's certainly a decent possibility, I think, with the way this particular playoff bracket is constructed.
Yeah, and the Patriots are going to be completely crumbling in terms of their team chemistry by the time the Chiefs play them. So they have that to their advantage as well. All right, any last thoughts on plays or guys that we didn't mention before we wrap things up?
Let's just make sure, are we all on board with Graham Gano at kicker?
Yeah, talk about 90% ownership. I mean, is there any other kicker play in this tournament but Graham Gano? I guess if you really like the Panthers, maybe, but...
What do you Sean, what do you think about the Gostkowski pivot at kicker?
That's probably not the direction I go there. But again, you know, Chiefs fans, that Kansas City juggernaut is rolling through. And just make sure you have a Chiefs centric lineup if you want to win this tournament.
All right.
Pete, before we let you go, I wanted to ask, on a scale of 1 to -100, how excited are you for Alabama Georgia in the fake national championship game?
Well, it would normally be -100, but hey, Pat, is my bookie sponsoring this episode?
I don't think they are, so.
Okay. I was going to give my bookie a free plug. But once I put...
Give them a plug. They sponsored all
Yeah, games. Once I place my big bet on mybookie.com, use referral code RVRadio, I might be moving up into the 15 to 20 range. That
the game on Saturday at the Rose Bowl, that was one of the funnest games I'd watched in a long time. So I would say I went from a negative 100 up into the positives after that game.
Is Georgia going to be able to run the ball the same way? Not the same way, but are they going to be able to run the ball at all against Alabama?
I know a couple players on Georgia that play running back. I believe one is named Nick Chubb and the other is named Sonny Michelle. So yeah, they seem to have a great two-headed attack. I think they'll really be able to kind of slice and dice their way. I can't take myself seriously.
Yeah, watch out for Sonny Michaels. He's a beast.
What, Sean, why don't you give us some real analysis on this game?
Well, we discussed how the real national champion is obviously Central Florida. And one of the things I struggle with a little bit, because I see it misused so frequently, is this idea of the eyeball test. Because it seems like it's employed almost entirely to suggest that the mid-major team is not as good. Which my assumption would be that it would be used to say, okay, this team has Tre'Quan Smith. This team that Scott Frost has put together is scoring at will. They have speed all over, which obviously was the big story that Auburn was not going to be ready for that. And it turned out that they weren't. So is the eyeball test being used correctly in our common parlance?
Yeah, I was really hoping that was a rhetorical question that you just wanted to kind of linger in the air shot.
So Pete, compare for us what in terms of like the greatest hate watching events of the 2017-2018 transition here, fake national championship game versus the current Star Wars movie.
I'm not a big Star Wars head. In fact, I haven't seen the new one. I haven't seen the one from.
I haven't seen the new one either.
Or I haven't seen the one from 2 years ago.
Oh wow!
So yeah, I'm a true hater in that I haven't even seen it. But so I don't know if maybe I should start calling it the fake Star Wars movie, like you're calling it the fake national championship game.
Sean, I love this dynamic of you just spitting hot takes about things Pete and I have not seen.
Did you like the new Star Wars, Sean?
I also haven't seen it because the people that I normally go to the movies with, they're boycotting because it. I don't know if you saw. Well, it sounds like you guys didn't see Rogue One, but in that one, we had basically everyone get killed to accomplish this somewhat absurd mission. And I saw it in 3D.
Geez, spoiler alert, Sean.
Spoilers for Rogue One.
Spoiler, goodness.
Well, that's one of the things that you can guarantee in a Star Wars movie is that billions of people are going to die. And so I don't think that's giving anything away to say that there's going to be a super weapon that completely envelops the rest of the plot and makes everything the individual humans are doing absurd. But then in the previous Star Wars film, we had a ultra bad guy Jedi struggle in a lightsaber battle against a common stormtrooper. And so there have been some potential weaknesses. And so anyway, the folks that I get to go to the movies with are currently boycotting this one. It has had a huge effect in that only like 700 million the first weekend. So by keeping our $15 out of there, that's definitely stopped the Star Wars train. So
well, Sean, I want to say you're already a fairly mysterious guy, but on top of this, you have a group of friends that you sit around and talk about the fake national championship game with, and another group of friends that you guys collectively had decided to boycott a movie that you routinely go to the theaters with. You are a fascinating man.
Well, the one of those two groups is also boycotting college football because we have this tournament committee, which ruins basically the entire NCAA experience. So this is maybe not a bad time to throw in the fact that in last year's college softball national tournament, Minnesota was ranked number one in the country and was not given one of the top 16 seeds. A year ago, obviously, Wichita State was top 10 in the KenPom rankings, which everyone knows are the official rankings, men's college basketball, and got like a 10 seed, which is equivalent of being ranked 40th. So we have some problems here that are leading to some boycotting of the NCAA as well.
All right. Well, you know, people are going to be a little bit bummed that this episode came out late, but we have softball hot takes, so I think that more than makes up for it. Pete, thanks so much for joining us, man. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I'd just like to say, if you guys don't know, the Pats are on bye this week. They earned it. They definitely did. They were out practicing today, and they will be back in action next week, hopefully hosting the Kansas City Chiefs so we can get revenge on that awful first game of the season. I've been tilted ever since.
Is that going to be CBS, Fox? Where can people tune in?
CBS, yep.
CBS, all right, great.
Thank you for listening to RotoViz Radio, the flagship RotoViz podcast. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the established RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter, @RotovizRadio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/radio.